If you love football, yelling at television screens with friends, and wearing clothing with someone else's name on it, there's a seat waiting for you at Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can enjoy football food and football beverages on our new $5 game day menu. Cheeseburger and fries, brats, cocktails, and pitchers of beer are just $5 each. Escape to football and the new $5 game day menu at Buffalo Wild Wings. Price and participation vary by location. Not valid with any other offer. Please drink responsibly.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. We are glad to have you. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to our humble little program.
Yes, we do appreciate you. And just a little heads up, you can call the show and ask questions of our fantastic guest today at 347-989-0126. Also, if you're on the Blog Talk page listening to the show live, underneath the scrolling box of photos, there's a chat room where you can participate, and our lovely producer, Scott, will let us know about that. Or if all else fails, you can tweet to us with using the hashtag VFChange. So those are all the ways you can reach out to us, and we hope you'll take advantage of one of those today.
We also recognize smoke signals and carrier pigeon, but those take a little bit longer. So just be aware.
Haha, you're right. Today we're chatting with someone that I admire a great deal. We both actually had the pleasure of taking a long but fun trip to New York to be on her show Talking Live. I personally have watched her for several years, consulting on Court TV and CNN and many other radio and television shows. So please welcome to our show, Dr. Robbie Ludwig.
Hello there. Great to be with you guys again.
Yay. We're so happy to have you on the show, Doc. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule.
We had such a good time when you did my show in New York City and got such a great response to the interview that we did together. So it's nice to be back again.
Yeah, definitely. I was really shocked when I saw the numbers on that show. So I'm really grateful to you to help, you know, because you helped me get my message out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we did have a great time. It was a lot of fun.
We had a blast. It was, you know, such a great trip for us. It was such a pleasure meeting you two. So thank you so much again for having us out. Everybody there was great. It was really nice. Please say hi to Jordan for us.
I will. Yes.
I've been showing everybody pictures that I took from the studio from.
Oh wow.
You know, Times Square and you know, even the little camera you guys use. I'm like, I'm just bragging about that thing. I'm like, this thing's so cool. You know. So
yeah, the best part about that for me is watching the interview, and while you're talking, the giant M&Ms in the window behind you.
I'll tell you, it's a scene stealer. I mean, my biggest competition is the M&Ms in the background. It is very true.
They're hilarious.
You got to watch that red guy.
It upstages me every time.
What are you going to do?
Well, if you don't have any questions for us, we're going to jump right on in.
Perfect. No, I don't have any questions. I'm just really glad that we are on a similar mission to destigmatize mental health issues, because it's long overdue and we still have a lot of work to do in that regard.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
So we will definitely get into that a little bit later, but so let's start off a little bit learning a little bit about you for the listeners that aren't familiar with you.
Okay.
What college did you attend, and what is your official title?
So I went to an all-women's college, which was in vogue, actually, at the time that I went, Cedar Crest College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And at the time, the college was joint with Muhlenberg College. It was separated by a very small park. So we were in the Lehigh Valley, and it was a very innocent, wonderful time when I went to college. My major was communications, and my minor in concentration was in psychology. So I was really, I was fortunate in the sense that I knew what I wanted to do fairly early on, but college was very different then than it is right now. And I went college shopping for my son. It was amazing to see all the TV studios that they had on campus and the ability to produce one's own show, both TV and radio on campus. We did not have that. So I'm not exactly sure how I thought I was going to make that leap from college to television, but it was something I was convinced I could do easily and effortlessly with no problem at all. So once I graduated Cedar Crest, I had a lot of friends who were going to graduate school, either med school or law school or dental school, and they were all in the Philadelphia area, and they were older than me. So I was like, well, I'm definitely moving to Philadelphia after I graduate, and I attended University of Pennsylvania. So I did a combination of working while I was at University of Pennsylvania, and that's where I got my master's in social work. So when I graduated there, I was looking for jobs in the area, in Philly, but there was a financial crash that happened, and it impacted the Philadelphia area before New York. And the truth of the matter is, my mother was not happy with who I was dating at the time, which was nothing new, trust me. She hardly liked anyone. And she literally, I mean, when I tell you this, you might be a little shocked, but if you knew my mother, you would not be shocked at all. She was so intent on getting me back to the city. She and my uncle had a little conversation, and they decided that New York City would be the perfect place for me to live, that I was just very well suited for New York City. And my mother proceeded to write cover letters to get jobs for me, literally. So I did not send out one cover letter, not one, zero, zip, nada. And it was unusual because it was like it was meant for me to be in the city, because every job I interviewed for, I got. Every single one. Every single one. I went on the interview, I got it, and when I moved to the city, I really hated it. But the first job that I got was in a psychiatric hospital, and it was just, I know this is going to sound bizarre, but I really enjoyed working there. I hated my boss, but it was a wonderful place for a young single woman to be in a hospital that was just very social, and there was so much to learn there. And that really was the launching pad, believe it or not, for my TV career. As bizarre as that may sound, the hospital had a publicity, the PR agency that they hired. It was actually the number one PR agency at the time. And I called the CEO just because I was ballsy, and they were, the hospital was not happy. They're like, who are you to call the CEO of this PR agency? And I was like, I don't know. I just figured I'd do it, And he was very lovely, Howard Rubenstein. And I said, how do I get into television? And he's like, well, you could do something wrong. That's a way to get onto television, or write a book, which was, I thought, pretty funny. But it was really being at the hospital, and that's when I started kind of figuring out how to include the TV piece. And I got TV training through a coach who ended up being my agent for a period of time, and sent out what they call kind of like CV tapes, resume tapes, and this is where you showcase your camera skills. And I found this person who put me on a huge demo reel that he would include me with hundreds of other people and send out to several stations. And it was from there that I got my first formal job in television at a small NBC station in Elmira, New York, which was in upstate New York. So it was about 7 hours away from my main, you know, New York City. And I would go up there every week and do a psychology segment. And I had my own show for a period of time called Real Talk. And it was just an amazing way to hone my skills because I was working in a location that allowed you to make mistakes and they still embraced you as you were hopefully getting more sophisticated skills. And so while I was there, I was also living in New York, so I presented my tape to the CEO of my hospital, and I said, you know, you have a lot of male doctors going out representing the hospital, but you don't have so many female voices. I'm trained in TV. Here's my videotape. Why don't you consider using me as one of the voices, and I'll represent the hospital? Well, he was kind of not a nice guy. He was really not a nice guy, and he's still not a nice guy, but he sent me out on one interview. And then they proceeded to criticize that one interview that I did. But he sent me on one interview, and it was enough for a producer from the Montel Williams show to see me and want to use me. And okay. So at the same time that I was doing kind of local TV, I was also doing national TV. I originally just wanted to be a local TV reporter, psychology reporter in New York City. I grew up with this very glamorous psychologist in New York City who did psychology segments as part of the regular news, Georgia Wicken. And I got to meet her years later. She's still very glamorous, but she was blonde and just beautiful and talked about psychology in the most intelligent way. And that's what I really wanted to do, local news, a psychology reporter.
That was your inspiration.
She was definitely one of my inspirations as far as having a job that I wanted to have. She was an inspiration. Dr. Joyce Brothers, I don't know if you're too young to remember who she
is.
We're old enough to remember.
So Dr. Joyce Brothers also was really an aha moment. My uncle was in television but did weather, and he was kind of this local TV star in New York City. And when I kind of experienced his job and his world, I was like, oh my God, that seems amazing. But I still wanted psychology, and I didn't want to be a regular anchor. And I was offered a job as a regular morning anchor. In fact, when they were interviewing me in Elmira, it was for that position. It was a morning anchor position. And I turned it down because I couldn't relocate, and that wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to stay true to what my interests were. So anyway, where was I? So my uncle was really one of the influences. When I was a teenager, I liked the TV world. And when I saw Dr. Joyce Brothers on a talk show talking about psychological issues and analyzing things, I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. I want to combine the two worlds and make it one world for myself. So these were kind of the people that helped me on my path. And fortunately, my perspective at the time was wherever I was, I saw as really a doorway to where I wanted to be.
Right.
And it kind of worked out that way. And listen, there are moments when you have a career flow, when the floodgates seem to open in the best possible way and things come your way and it's wonderful. And then there are moments in one's career where it's not as easy and not as effortless. And I guess that's just the reality. And so it's been a very interesting ride. I've met some fascinating people, and it's just the type of work that continues to inspire me, and I continue to feel passionate about it. So in that regard, I'm really fortunate.
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Definitely.
You know, sorry, I'm still trying to get over my cough, so bear with me.
You're excused on my end.
Thanks. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, I actually went to, we have a local broadcasting school here in Detroit, and I went there about 20 years ago. And, you know, that's the one thing is they prepare you by telling you, well, you're going to start by living out in the middle of nowhere, doing farm reports, and that's how you're going to hone your craft. And
mm-hmm.
eventually you work your way up. And it's always awesome. It's always very cool to me when we have guests like yourself on our show that, you know, have a career path like that, where you see, okay, you're paying your dues, you're going out there, you're scratching and clawing to get to the next level, and then the next level, and the next level, and you don't give up. You know, that's inspiring.
Definitely.
And that's awesome. You know.
Yeah, to me, it just really felt like that wasn't an answer. Although, you know, listen, I joke around, and there were times I got so many no's that I was like, well, if this doesn't work out, you know, maybe I should have a plan B. And I think my plan B was I was going to sell sterling silver jewelry in Mexico. I was like, okay, I'll do that. it's tough. I mean, I think that you need supportive people around you. You need to kind of be well suited, I think, for the direction that you're moving in. But it's a process, and it's not like doors open automatically. And in a way, that's a good thing, because it makes you more appreciative of the little gets that you do get. And I was a little bit older when I entered into the TV world, because it wasn't my first career. I wasn't somebody who graduated from college and got a TV job at 22, which I'm glad about, because I think if it would have happened for me a little bit earlier, I don't know that I would have been as mature. I mean, I've met people who are young and mature and seem to handle the opportunities that come their way so well, and I'm very impressed by that. But I don't know if that would have been me. So by the time that I got into TV, I was appreciative, I was mature, I could depend on myself to follow through, and so in that way, the timing was really right.
Yeah, you have to have that. You need the growing pains, you know. You need the life experience to come in at the exact right time, you know.
Yeah. No, it's really true, and it makes all the difference in the world, because you can get something, but then it's not only about getting, it's about keeping.
Right.
And it's a small world, and I'm always amazed. And now with social media, it kind of makes it even interesting. I was at this art event gallery opening a couple days ago, and this photographer came up to me. He's like, you look familiar. I never forget a face because I'm a photographer. We started talking. It turns out he used to date or was friends with somebody who I'm friends with. We have the same agent, and we looked on social media. We decided to follow each other on Instagram, and you know, we were looking at the common contacts, and you can even see it on social media of, you know, the common friends. Like, it's not even 6 degrees of separation. It's almost 2 degrees of separation.
Right.
But now we have kind of this concretized documentation of who knows who. But in the past, it was more theoretical. But really, your reputation and reliability is your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And speaks to who you are. And I do think that when you're older, you're able to appreciate that in a much more powerful way.
Yeah,
you really do.
That.
Well, Doc, we're 16 minutes in. We're gonna go ahead and take our first break.
Okay.
Go ahead, babe.
Okay, all right.
I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I didn't need to talk today. Anyway, this is Blake MacIver's "Start to Believe."
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for, yeah. Give me all that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe.
Ooh, shana, 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 ooh, shana.
looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble eyes, 'cause now you bring me all I could ask for. Give me all that I need, and baby, you gather the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Yeah,
I guess I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start. My doubts close in, I know that you'll be there. I won't despair, my dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. Yeah. Give me all that I need. Maybe I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start.
I guess I'll start.
I guess I'll start. Whoa, whoa,
yeah. I guess I'll start. I guess I'll
start. I said I guess I'll start. I guess I'll start to believe. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back. You are listening to Voices for Change 2.0, and we are here with the fabulous Dr. Robbie Ludwig.
How are you doing?
How is it going, Dr. Ludwig? You feeling pretty good?
I'm feeling great. Thank you.
Good. Glad
Yay.
To hear it. So let's go back to the questions that we were kind of working on before. If you remember, what was your first experience with consulting on a television show?
Well, my first experience was Good Day New York. CEO of Gracie Square Hospital allowed me to go out on behalf of the hospital and be interviewed about a psychological subject. And I think the subject was how to pursue your dreams. I think it was something like that, how to go after your dreams. And that was my first experience. And I was, you know, a big, very green and a little bit nervous. But, you know, I dressed for the part, and I certainly enjoyed doing it. I remember the interviewer, the person who interviewed me, Tony Potts. He was an entertainment reporter, or he went on to be an entertainment reporter, and then I think segued into the business world after he left television. Mm. And afterwards, they had a consultant, and they were kind of picking out what I did wrong and what I did right, and I think there was very little they thought I did right, but that was really the launching pad for me. I was very fortunate that I appeared there once, and then a producer saw me and wanted to bring me into the Montel Williams show, which was in New York City at the time, and Montel was very generous. He loved helping new people in the business. And if
he's
you
always
were new,
seemed like such a great guy.
Yeah.
He's very charismatic. I mean, he's the type of person who could talk about tying his shoelaces in a very riveting way. I'm not like that, but he definitely had that skill. And he was lovely to me, and the show loved me, and they brought me on all the time as an expert. And it was a real launching pad for me. And then during that time, you know, I expanded to the psychology reporting because I really wanted to separate myself from everybody else. And producers kind of talk, and one person sees you and another person sees you, and if you're a new face, they want to try you out, and if they see that they can rely on you, that's really what led to me being used all the time. And it also was a different time. It was a time when there were a lot of national talk shows mm-hmm. talking about psychological issues.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have it as much now. Now it's either
no.
you get, you know, Dr. Phil, which,
right.
you know, I like Dr. Phil. You know, we watch him. Or you get, like, Jerry Springer type stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and there's not much middle ground between the two, you know, and it's that makes it hard, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything changes in TV. So when mm-hmm. I came about, really it was Dr. Phil who opened up the opportunities for psychologists on TV, because before there was some concern about would anyone be interested in listening to what a shrink had to say. And so with the popularity of Dr. Phil, that really did open up people's minds in terms of the possibility, seeing the possibilities of where a therapist could be used in a really powerful way as a part of a show. But now it's really a lot of court shows, right? So there are a lot of judge
mm-hmm.
shows. That's kind of the modern day talk show right now that seems to work, that they're plugging in. And it's very hard for talk shows to survive. And I'm not exactly sure if that's a byproduct of just the shift in changing times, because that happens, or they're just people had their fill and want something different. But I think at the time it was like our version of reality show, right? We'd bring people on
mm-hmm.
talking about real issues, and then there was hopefully a solution, and people were fascinated to see real people having experiences that they may or may not have related to, but there was a cathartic component to it.
Excuse me. I think one other thing too with the change, in shows and content and whatnot is, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, right? That's the saying.
Mm-hmm.
And when Oprah ended her show,
mm-hmm.
you know, that created a vacuum. And I think, you know, right now that vacuum is being filled with, you know, your court shows and whatnot. And it's not the same. I don't think it has the same impact that, you know, shows like Oprah had. But I lost my point. Doggone it. I had a really good point, and then it flew away.
It'll come back. Well, it's true. I mean, yeah, you know, I guess Oprah decided to go in a different direction, and
mm-hmm.
I do think we need guides. You know, I do think
yeah.
we need inspiration and something to aspire to. And although reality shows may be fun in some ways, is almost like TV junk food.
Exactly. That's a very well put description.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there is, we've really, the audience has really become it's become judgment TV, where people get to sit back and just judge, right? Just judge
right.
what we, you know, how horrible these people are acting. I mean, there is a place for people to inspire us, you know, for us to look towards television or somewhere where we could say, I'd like to be like that, or here's an inspiration for who I want to be. And I do think Sex and the City offered that as far as female friendships, because
mm-hmm.
it showed how women can be very different, but the power of supporting one another, even when you're in different life phases. And, you know, much of the show wasn't so realistic. And even in real life, you know, there's complications in terms of some of the women getting along. But in terms
yeah.
of on a cultural landscape, we ate it up. And I think that's why that show is so powerful, because we don't have enough of that. We just have a lot of people behaving badly. And
yeah.
well, that's okay some of the time. I really don't think that's okay all of the time.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think a lot of this stuff, it's catering to the lowest common denominator sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a derogatory way towards the viewers. It's more, well, here's the absolute worst situation you can think of. You know, and people watch it and think, oh, my God, thank God that's not me.
That's mm-hmm. what I used to tell my mom. My mom would get on my case about what I was watching on TV. And I would literally just tell her, look, I'm just watching this to be able to say, thankfully, this isn't my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, there is a certain entertainment value to some of it. You know, I'll be the first to say that I do watch some junky, crappy TV.
She does. she really does.
But it's really just in that hour or half hour or whatever it is, it's taking you completely out of your life.
Yeah.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and into this other world where you maybe don't have as many problems that you have to focus on at that moment. And I think that's really, I hated reality TV when it first started. Mm-hmm. I was completely against it. But now that there's these different shows that, you know, I've gotten into, I see where there could be a problem with, you know, just advocating for bad behavior, but I also see where there's an entertainment value.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, and there are some things out there that are very educational, in surprising ways. You know, we'll watch Judge Judy, for example. Mm-hmm.
Judge Judy is my go to show.
I love
don't,
her. She's so talented.
I
yeah.
don't miss a day. I never miss a day of her show. And there will be times when I'll have old episodes that they've shown on the weekends stored on the VCR for days when I can't, you know, watch her show right at 4 o'clock. I'm dreading the time when she goes off the air.
She's great. She's great. I know. She's very common sense, smart, and just... Mm-hmm. A true talent.
Yeah, and it's educational. I mean, a few years ago, Beck had a pet sitting business, and all the contracts that she wrote up for her business,
mm-hmm.
she got everything from watching Judge Judy. All
wow.
the stuff that. Yeah, yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's it was crazy.
I had
crazy.
Good contracts.
She had
I'm
good
not
contracts.
Gonna lie. I had good contracts.
So let's direct things back to Dr. Ludwig.
Yes,
shall we?
Please do.
You recently published a book called Your Best Age Is Now.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it and the target audience for that book?
Sure. I wrote Your Best Age Is Now, which was really a passion project for me. It was a labor of love. And it was based on just writing something based on what I really wanted to say and what I was observing out there. So, you know, there were a combination of factors that contributed to me wanting to write this book, redefining what midlife is and how it was being perceived out there. I was noticing in my practice people during midlife who were achieving some of their life goals and living happier than they ever had before. And looking around New York City, you know, midlife being portrayed as all of a sudden you're irrelevant or invisible, you know, these women were not irrelevant or invisible. They were quite glamorous and had taken care of themselves, and nobody looked old and decrepit. And I just really felt that there was a shift going on, that the old midlife was not the current midlife, and that may happen, but it wasn't happening from what I was seeing during the timeline that we were being told. And at the same time, I felt that the cultural script was contributing to this interesting paradox that in some ways we were living younger longer, but internalizing a potential expiration date. And I felt that that was really unhealthy and inaccurate, and I wanted to address it in a way that had not been addressed before. If you look at a lot of the midlife books, it's how do you accept the loss of your
right.
And how, you know, and some of them are funny, but here's how to come to terms with being invisible. And I was like, these are so depressing and they're not accurate. And I really didn't like what I was seeing out there, but yet the research was presenting something very different, that we weren't losing our minds, that, you know, because of current medicine, it was really changing all of our lifestyles and choices in so many ways. And so I wanted to address that because I also struggled with this internalization, being part of a culture. How could you not, right? You have to kind of fight it. And I was sent out for this TV job interview, and somebody asked me my age, and I never lie about my age because I feel like that's like dismissing who I am. So I told them how old I was, and it just seemed, the feeling that I got was, oh, you know, they weren't interested in me. It must be too late for me, or, you know, my time had come and gone, or that was my concern. And I don't let myself live in that darkness for too long. So I was like, no, this, I have to look at this and see what I can do to kind of bring all the information that I'm noticing together and present a very different option for people. And so that's really what contributed to the book. I wanted to have a book out in the space that gave women a better picture of what the landscape of midlife truly is right now and opportunities to be game changers in their own life in terms of rejecting outmoded ideas, rebelling against them, having a little moxie. And I give a strategy in my book of how to live like your best ages now. And the people who have read it have responded really positively to it, which has been so wonderful for me. And people are hungry for advice that's positive, yet powerful and backed by science. And I think that we could see that, you know, really people are living younger, longer, and yet this idea that, you know, I think Hollywood is a reflection of, you know, that, you know, youth is where it's at and there's this idealization of youth, but everything's changing because we're living longer and we don't want to give up on ourselves after 30. And so, you know, that seems a little ridiculous. Here you get to live so much longer, but your opportunities are zero. Well, that's not really a very appealing option. I think people want to continue to create throughout their lives. Right. And the truth of the matter is midlife feels a lot better to people than they ever imagined. They look better than they ever imagined. And many feel better than they did when they were younger. I know that's true for me. Definitely true for me. It's like when I was younger, I think that there's more of this disease to please and putting people up on a pedestal, like you have to get them to like you, you have to get them to think you're smart, there's almost this, you have to prove yourself.
Right.
You're trying to prove yourself. And I think during midlife, it's really, oh, God, I am who I am. Everybody's got their issues. I don't need somebody else to approve of me. Like, you take it or leave it.
I've paid my dues. And, you know, take me or leave me.
Yes, and it's like, listen, I like who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect, and you're not perfect. And there's kind of one has been humbled by life, and you realize that everyone has to some extent. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own challenges. And so most people will say, God, I feel so much better now. And so it is weird to kind of have this space where people are feeling better, they know more, and yet society is saying, hey, it may be too late for you. And
yeah,
men
it's
are
the
vulnerable
twilight of
too.
Your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like
I have
saying.
To just say, and then I'll let you get, and then I'll let you ask me questions because I just think this was so interesting. I went to this, I guess it was an event called Better Than Ever, and it was about ageism in Hollywood, and it was Marlo Thomas and Sheila Nevins, who is the president of HBO documentary, and some other, Carol Kane, some other very high-profile actresses. And, you know, they said something that I thought was really powerful and really true, that when kind of this this ageist idea, or when we tell, especially, you know, women they're too old or over the hill, that it really is a way of stigmatizing and stereotyping, and it's a way to oppress women, because men
yeah.
don't have quite the same. They do, but not really. Like, look at
yeah.
you were telling me about your dad who had you when he was 55. Now
yeah.
that was always an option for men. I mean, now we know a little bit more that, you know, not, you know, the man who's having a baby at 55 might be different than the man who's having
a
baby at 30. You know, that
right.
we do know that now, but now women can have babies at all different ages. And it's
right.
been a game
yeah.
changer in terms of, you know, options for women too. So anyway, I think whenever we talk about stereotyping, and this goes for mental health issues as well, it's a form of oppression. It's a way to get people to count themselves out. And that's
right.
where having a little bit of moxie and knowledge really becomes very useful.
Well, you definitely have the moxie. I'll
oh, yeah,
tell you that.
For sure.
You know, it's funny, you know, that you mentioned the you know, getting older and everything. And 'cause you look at Hollywood and, you know, some of the biggest action movies of the last 5-10 years have starred people that were huge action stars back in the '80s, back when, you know, Beck and I were kids. You know, you're seeing Harrison Ford in his mid-70s in a Star Wars movie, in a Blade Runner, you
mm-hmm.
know, and you're seeing, you know, Stallone, you know, going out and still doing
blowing
action movies,
up.
Blowing stuff up, and you know, Schwarzenegger's working on the next Terminator movie, and he's God knows how old. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're still seeing that, you know, and it's just, it's unbelievable because, you know, there isn't any, you can't point to anybody young and say, well, that's the next Stallone or that's the next,
mm-hmm.
you know,
cause we still
Harrison
have
Ford. Yeah, because you still have them.
Well, it's like Dr. Ludwig was saying, because you start to accumulate this, you know, knowledge and self-awareness as you're getting older, you start to learn who's good for your life and who's bad for your life, who
mm-hmm.
you can cut out and,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's the best time to do it. And, you know, you really just start to, like I said, get this feeling of self-awareness, like, hey, you know, you're not good for me, I don't need you in my life, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
you know?
Acceptance.
Yeah, exactly.
Acceptance. You know, you learn to accept certain things about yourself, and you strive, you know, we've only got a finite amount of time on this planet, you know, we all
right.
do, and we have to make the absolute best of it. And, you know, when you're young, when you're in your 20s and you're just starting out, you're getting new life experiences and you're taking in everything you can. By the time you're in your 40s, it's like, all right, I've gotten some stuff out of my system. I know who I am. I know what I want. I know where I want to be. And you have a new focus, you know, and that's, you know, and you're taking, you still have pressures on you. And I mean, Beck and I have the luxury of not having children where we have to worry about walking them through these different steps in life, you know,
mm-hmm,
be it learning,
mm-hmm.
learning to drive or putting them in college or whatever, you know.
Well, that's not, you kind of put it a strange way. I wouldn't say
luxury.
The luxury. Yeah, that's kind of.
Yeah.
We chose early on not to have children, but it wasn't because we thought that they would, you know.
Right. It wasn't out of anything.
Impact our lives negatively.
Selfishly
or anything.
Or anything. Yeah, it was having more to do with, you know, what Beck goes through with her bipolar and whatnot. And, you know, just different other factors. And, you know, so that said, you know, we're in our 40s, you know, doing this show, and she's getting her word out with her book. And, you know, now it's a mentoring stage. You know, now for us, it's, you know, I'm out there teaching guitar and you know, passing on this knowledge of what we've learned, you know, and, you know, you're doing the same thing with, you know, with your book and with your show. You're showing people
everything that you're doing. It's all amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you. It's, you know, it's, I was hearing, I forget where I heard this from. Oh, maybe it was Oprah. She was talking on CBS. I think she has a new book that came out. And she was saying before her show, or each time she goes on and says something, she thinks about what is her intention? You know, what is her purpose? And I really do try to think about that before I do a public speaking engagement or before I go on television. I see myself more as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And what I want people to get out of it is I want them to have a takeaway that they can use in their life, a quick takeaway
right.
that's powerful, that's true, that's useful. And I think as long as we are putting out information with that intention, it has to work, as long as the intention is good.
Right.
Probably there are people that go out with a bad intention, and that may work temporarily, but I don't think it works ultimately in the long run. And
right.
so, you know, that's what you were doing. And so you tend to travel in you know, amongst people who have a like-minded vision, because those are your people.
Right.
You know, people who are kind of in the world in a similar kind of way. And it's a nice way to be in the world. I was, you know, in my book, I talk towards the end about purpose versus happiness. And, you know, it's great to work towards being happy, and I think, you know, it's something we should all try to feel as good as we can. But when you're in purpose, it gives your life meaning, and it's a much more substantive way to live.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, as I indicated before, you do have this fabulous show called Talking Live that you stream live on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with the idea to stream it on Facebook, and how long has it been on?
Good question. Well, I was approached. This is kind of a funny story. So a producer I worked with on the Montel Williams show approached me and said, Robbie, we really think that Facebook is going to be a very important platform moving forward. That's where all the eyeballs are. And really the media landscape has changed so much, so that TV is trying to desperately hold on to their viewers, and people are just on their phones and following content based on interest level. And he worked with a producer and a production company, Julian, who you met, and they really are kind of wanted to launch into this new area and do a talk show that had all of the professionalism that you would bring or see on television. And that's really how it started. I want to say, gosh, I don't even remember when our first show was. I could probably look it up. But, you know, we've been doing it not quite a year yet, weekly, religiously.
Okay.
Our viewership has gone up by leaps and bounds, and we've learned a lot as we've gone on. I mean, in some ways we went out there, and it was kind of a learning curve, trial and error. Let's see what works. Let's hone the talk show so that, you know, we're really – speaking about things that people want to hear and interviewing people that have an audience and a voice already, and it's in a slightly different way. And Rebecca, that's how I found you, through discovering that you were a psychology influencer, and that's how we met. And so it's been just, again, I've loved the process, because I get to work with people I really love. And it's a happy place for me, and I'm putting out content that's positive, that I feel is useful, and I'm giving a platform to people that I believe in. And so there's no conflict of interest there. We did a DACA show the other day that's up to almost 40,000 views, and
wow.
The law firm was offering free consultation for people who were nervous or worried, and we were able to, in a very apolitical way, direct people to gather information in a way that would be useful. So I feel good being able to use this platform to get information out there that can be helpful, because I can't see everybody in my private practice, and I'm not even meant to see everybody in my private practice, but to have another
right.
way that I can have a more control over too, because listen, I love being an expert, and I love some of the shows that I've hosted, but it's hard to control some of these things because TV is very fast. And so,
right. You
know, sometimes things click, sometimes they don't. Things are always changing. So I'm always a little bit at the mercy of other people choosing me, which is okay, but it's really nice to be in a position of being able to make choices myself and to be a little bit more creatively in control.
Yeah, that's a good feeling, and it's a great show.
Thank you so much.
You guys do an awesome job.
I was just blown away by the whole process. I thought it was amazing. So.
Yeah.
Oh, good! I'm so glad. And you can see, like, how lovely is our team?
Our team is
just—they're just really nice, good people who are bringing their A game. And to be surrounded by that, I feel blessed, although I don't like to say that too much because I get superstitious, but I really enjoy being around people who bring their A game and are talented, and that's what drives me.
Well, we are running short on time, but we briefly wanted to talk to you a little bit about one of the topics you've been consulting about recently, which is sexual harassment, since it's been in the forefront of the news lately.
Mm-hmm.
Were you aware that it was as common as it is?
To be honest with you, I don't know that I thought about it. I don't know that I thought about it so much. I certainly have had friends who have described scenarios where they felt the repercussions for not saying yes to certain dating situations with a boss who's powerful, and they felt that that led to either not getting the job they wanted or kind of being diminished somehow in the professional world.
I heard, and
I guess there are always murmurs out there. In my own personal life, I've not really experienced it. I mean, I had one business meeting where the guy who was much older than me, you know, came off almost fatherly at first and then tried to segue into something else. And I remember feeling really dirty and really bad about that and betrayed. But, you know, I could walk away from the situation. And
right.
I never had to deal with it again. And it's an ugly feeling because I think women tend to blame themselves for the way relationships turn. And I knew I was not putting myself out there that way with this guy and that this guy was just being a jerk. But it's not a good feeling. And imagine if you're dependent on a job for your finances or you're financially responsible for other people and this is happening. It's a scary situation. So I'm glad that it's coming out. I'll be actually interviewing Gretchen Carlson probably in December about her latest book, Fierce. So, you know, it's certainly a conversation that I want to address. And I do think that there is a shift going on, not necessarily in human nature, but that everybody could be caught so much easier and that what was considered just normal and we should be able to accept it is now not acceptable. So I think we are certainly through conversation and education moving in the right direction.
That's a perfect way to sum it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We had a couple of more questions for you, but unfortunately our time is running out. We wish we could have stretched this out to a 2-hour show, actually.
We probably could have.
Now, you don't want to lose your audience, Rebecca, please.
Got to leave them wanting more.
So, if you wouldn't mind just staying on the line, we'll be back with you in just a few minutes. And here is David Hernandez with Beautiful.
Jamie, you have your workout coat?
It's farther in the sky, and they're starting to align. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the sky. Now my love is flashing by, all I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side, can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? Cause I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, wrote you a love song, baby.
Us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.
If you love football, yelling at television screens with friends, and wearing clothing with someone else's name on it, there's a seat waiting for you at Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can enjoy football food and football beverages on our new $5 game day menu. Cheeseburger and fries, brats, cocktails and pitchers of beer are just $5 each. Escape to football and the new $5 game day menu at Buffalo Wild Wings. Price and participation vary by location, not valid with any other offer. Please drink responsibly. If you love football, yelling at television screens with friends, and wearing clothing with someone else's name on it, there's a seat waiting for you at Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can enjoy football food and football beverages on our new $5 game day menu. Cheeseburger and fries, brats, cocktails, and pitchers of beer are just $5 each. Escape to football and the new $5 game day menu at Buffalo Wild Wings. Price and participation vary by location, not valid with any other offer. Please drink responsibly.